everyone. Welcome to the 14th episode of the NLSC Podcast, the weekly show about basketball video games that you and your fake girlfriend can enjoy together. I'm Andrew, and as always, I'm joined by Leftos. Hello, Leftos.
Hello, hello. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Yourself?
I've had a very slow but, you know, nice week. Sometimes it's better to have no bad news than than any news.
That's right. So, with no news, another four-hour podcast, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. At least my calculations say that we should be hitting 4 hours pretty soon. So,
current projections say yes.
Yeah.
And this week we're once again joined by Ben. How are you going, Ben?
I'm doing well, thanks, guys, and hope you have a good week. And looking forward to this week's show.
Alrighty, let's get on with it. So we're going to change things up a little bit and just do a quick recap of the news this week. It's been a bit of a slow week as far as news is concerned, but here are the highlights. A new official roster came out for NBA 2K13. Once again, not a whole lot of updates. Did have some new ratings and some injury status updated for various players that were returning or are now out of action. As far as unofficial roster updates go, Hawk23 released version 38 of the Ultimate Base roster. That includes latest rosters for the current season and a few more retro teams and retro seasons. So if you're still playing last year's game, be sure to check that out. The All-Star Weekend downloadable content for the PlayStation 3 is now available internationally after some initial problems where it wasn't available. So if you are inclined to pick that up, you know our thoughts on that by now, but if you are inclined to pick that up, you can go ahead. Bizarre has released a new Play of the Day series for NBA 2K13, which is definitely worth checking out if you want to learn a bit more about how to get the most out of the game and especially the play calling system. Mm-hmm. Definitely also check out his strategy sessions for NBA 2K12, for last year's game. Still very much relevant as far as releasing the shop releases and all kinds of gameplay information there. And in NBA news, the Sacramento Kings sale is all but official at this point, and it does look like they are going to become the new Seattle Supersonics. We spoke about that at length last week, so we won't be going into that again. But you can take your thoughts to the forum and check out the website and forum for more news and more information on those stories. Okay.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
That's pretty much. It's been a slow week. It's been a very slow week news wise. I mean, when the most noteworthy items are, you know, besides the King sale, that's supposed to be close to final. When the most noteworthy items are a fake girlfriend and whether she ever existed, and you know, a guy that sued everyone and their families. Going on Oprah to confess that he's been in the wrong all those years, that he's been making money off of suing people for wrongfully accusing him. You know, it's a really slow week.
Indeed. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I just want to get that out in the open. I don't know how to say this without, you know, going into the explicit area. So
then go there, my friend.
Okay, yeah. So a big fuck you to Lance Armstrong for everything over those past few years. I mean, it's one thing, you know, maybe it's common knowledge that, you know, professional athletes, most of them dope themselves. But if you're going through so many years, you know, lying to everybody and being so passionate about not having anything to do with those accusations and actually suing people whenever they accuse you of it and making money off those cases for libel, and then, you know, some years later going on Oprah to just say that, you know, everyone was right, I was actually doping, you know, I've been in the wrong. Is he besides the disappointment of all the people looking up to him, and, you know, still believing that he was an advocate for clear, for being clean and being a professional athlete, he's pretty much not only ruined his reputation, he's pretty much ruined it for everyone that, you know, rooted for him over the years. And I'm really curious to see what happens to all the people that got sued for libel. And, you know, when Armstrong actually won those cases, what happens now that he has actually gotten, you know, cases to go in his favor. And he, how can you, you know, just go openly and say, you know, all those cases were actually decided wrong? And, you know, it's as far as the legal aspect goes, you know, besides all the, you know, being having your medals revoked and everything, it's a huge thing to have gotten money. Besides the monetary prizes for those events, it's a really big thing having earned money out of suing people and for something that was, you know, that was a lie in the first place. So,
well, I think the unfortunate thing, unfortunately, it's just going to be swept under the rug. I don't think they're going to get their money back. They got a half-hearted apology of sorts from him. I think it wasn't he joking about, oh, I can't even remember how many people I've sued, and I'm sure they remember quite vividly how many are being sued by him. It is very unfortunate. I mean, I don't know what else I can add about it. I mean, you've got this really good, a feel-good story of someone who has overcome cancer, which should be a real story of triumph, and then returns to the sport that he excelled at and excelled even more, and then to find out that he has been doping, and apparently not the only one, but he was held up as the example and such as a
he was putting himself in that position of being the example.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, and it's just disgusting. It's really unfortunate. We do live in a very cynical world these days. As far as it's hard to. We probably shouldn't be looking to a lot of these people as heroes anyway, but at a time when it'd be nice to get some good positive stories, yeah, it's just a shame that another one bites the dust as far as being,
That's true.
It's not being not being above level.
Take into account too how many times cycling has been tarnished by drug cheats and stuff like that, especially with the Tour de France. You know, it doesn't help their cause. A lot of people are probably going to be turned away from the sport, from all this, you know. I've owned two Livestrong armbands. That's, you know, that's all I've bought to support the organization and that. I feel bad for them. Like, I'm glad Nike's still supporting the organization. But, you know, a lot of people have been, like, crossing or highlighting the LIES part of Livestrong to sort of make a stance and all that. So, yeah, their organization has been tarnished a bit, which is a damn shame, because that work in itself was doing some good things, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think he's a damn fool. And, yeah, his rep should not be... his rep should be tarnished for life, in a sense, for the deceitfulness that he did bring to, well, a lot of people, and all those defamation cases and all that were against him, and it's a mess, and I hope something does get resolved from it, and those people that had their own reputations and that destroyed by speaking the truth will get their day in court and have that moment of jubilee.
Yeah.
So, moving on to anything, to something more positive from the past week. Any news you want to, guys, you want to bring up? Any?
Well, the NBA All-Star starters were announced last week.
Yeah.
And have you guys got any thoughts on them? Just to run them down again for anyone who's somehow missed that announcement, the West starting lineup will be Chris Paul, Kobe Bryant, Kevin Durant, Blake Griffin, and Dwight Howard. And the East, it will be Rajon Rondo, LeBron James. Why am I forgetting these guys? Help me out.
It's Wade,
Rondo, James, Anthony, and Garnett for the East.
That's right.
Yeah. Do you, Ben, want to go first with your comments on that?
Yeah, I'll go first. I suppose the argument comes into play, like, should a team's record affect who gets selected in a lot of ways? Like, the Lakers' current losing record, which really enjoying. It's why should Dwight and Kobe be selected at this stage? That's as well as KG. Right, I'll even throw him in there. I don't think he's been performing as well, obviously, with his age. But yeah, with Dwight being such a disappointment in particular, I'm just hoping it's not ad-ass marketing like it was a few years ago. That with the whole team signature range thing that they did with the five guys like Chauncey, Tim, and all that stuff, when they all seem to get selected for All-Star Game starters. There's a few questions. I think there's some more deserving athletes that deserve a starting role. So, yeah, that's my two cents on that.
Well, if we go purely by voting, Kobe Bryant was the most voted person on the whole of both conferences. He got as near as it makes no difference, 1,600,000 votes, closely followed by LeBron James, who is in the East. So, you know, if we're going to go purely by fan voting, that's those people were the most requested to show up in the All-Star game. But the question I have for you guys is whether you agree with the transition this year to having the forward and center positions merged into one, the front court selections, which makes, you know, pure centers have to go up against all the forwards as well. And do you agree with that move, Andrew? What's your take on this one?
I actually do like it because there aren't that many great pure centers left in the league. You've got Duncan and Garnett these days. Still both quite effective. Duncan more so far this season. Pretty much been power forwards through their career that have spent a lot of time at center and never really been classified as such. A lot of the times that a lot of games that Tim Duncan probably should have been starting throughout the years, he's missed out on because the voting hasn't really gone in his favor because two other forwards have been a bit more popular with the fans. So I actually do like the change because it's not really snubbing anyone. And you see Howard getting in the West. People are still kind of going for that guard, forward, center method of voting, even though it is backcourt and frontcourt. People still are throwing a center in there.
Yeah,
With the East, I think Garnett kind of got it. Yeah, he's almost grandfathered into the game, I think. I would have, obviously I'm biased in this pick, I would have had Noah starting, or you could have even had Hibbert of the Indiana Pacers.
Yeah.
Would have been appropriate given their performances this year. But I actually wrote my Friday Five last week in defense of fan voting because a lot of people don't like it. I don't know whether you gentlemen have seen the article.
Yeah, yeah. Yet. But, I saw.
I mean, the only ones that I'd really dispute that, well, Garnett, obviously, Howard, still one of the best centers in the game, even though he's not playing at his best so far this season, coming back off that the back surgery and adjusting to playing with Kobe and the rest of the Lakers. But if that means that 80% of the starting lineups are legitimate, and I think they are, then I think fan voting still works. And it's an event for the fans, as much as it's supposed to be a prestigious event and an honor to be an All-Star. It's still an exhibition for the fans, the ultimate fantasy team come to life, is the way I put it in the Friday Five. So I'm okay with that. I think the bench is going to be rounded out with deserving players. 18 to 20 of the players, we're probably not going to be able to really easily dispute as whether they should be there or not. And it should be a pretty decent game as long as the score doesn't get silly and a blowout by the end of the third quarter. As long as it's close by the fourth quarter, we're usually in for a decent game towards the end. So I don't really mind the way that that's turned out, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
My sort of thoughts about it is sort of think back to when Grant Hill got selected as a starter a few years ago. You know, he'd been out of the game really due to injury for like, what was it, 5 years? And then, I don't know, fans must have thought it was like 95, 96 all over again. where he started over some more deserving players. So that's my thoughts there. I do miss the 90s with the old, like, the true power center game. Like, you had, like, Shaq, Hakeem, David Robinson, Ewing, Zoe, and all that stuff. You know, that's a sad aspect of the game that, you know, I'd love to see that kind of play back. We'll come back into the game. I know the game is changing and the power forwards are now, I suppose, slightly more athletic or able to shoot a further range, a la Dirk, Gasol trying to. But, yeah, it's a missing art of the game, and I think fans will end up eventually missing it in time to sort of see a true center play. Like, for me, Dwight Howard should be more of a post-up player. Like, he has the power to do it, unless his shoulders are just basically silicon implants. So he's that soft right now. It's not funny. I'd really love to see another generation of Shaqs, Hakeems, and David Robinsons back in the game.
We're kind of in a point guard phase now at the moment, where we're seeing all the great point guards coming along. There's some point guard league now.
The topic on, we even had a topic last week on Wall versus Irving versus Lillard on, you know, the most promising point guards right now. And I have to say that I actually, vouched for Irving because of his very impressive play so far. But it seems to be the way the rules have changed. They seem to be favoring, more athletic players, more drives to the basket. You see, the front court being less used and less used inside. You see many more players in the power forward spot developing jump shots and even set shots, mid-range shots and three-point shots lately. And you can see that trend, even getting to the All-Star Game voting. A fun piece of trivia is that Dwight Howard got almost 700,000 less votes than last year. That's almost half his votes. He was the most voted player last year with 1.6 million votes, and this year he only got 900,000 votes. Which is, how did he just lose 700,000 Magic fans in one year?
Everyone's kind of disgusted with Dwight Howard, though. I think his popularity has taken a bit of a hit, so it could have been that. But you are right. I would say that it has affected him, the front court, back court system, because now people can cast the vote for Durant, Griffin, Duncan, for example.
Marcus Aldridge.
Exactly.
Well, they can, but you can also vote for three small forwards in. Forced into voting, specifically players. That any players that can play the center position. I mean, the experiment was successful. They actually got centers in the starters based on votes. But, you could end up with no pure center in there.
I don't think you would if
Dwight Howard tries to does his best to remain as disgusting as he was last year.
Yeah. I still don't think it's going to happen. I think people are kind of going to go. I mean, as much as a lot of people on the internet like to snark at the so-called stupid masses, most fans that would care enough to vote for the All-Star starters know a little bit about basketball and how a lineup looks. So I still think that most of the time, people are going to vote that way. I don't think you're going to get, like you say, three 6 foot seven small forwards or such. Although with Durant in the lineup, you've got almost a 7-footer anyway, so I guess he can jump against whoever's coming from the East. But I think people are still going to vote along the traditional lines. It's just going to allow for a bit more flexibility when perhaps there is a bit of a debate as to whether a true centre's the best or someone who's a bit of a hybrid power forward centre like Duncan is actually a more deserving choice. I think it's going to work out.
You know, but you're a strong advocate of fan voting, and you made that pretty clear. And you know, just looking at the votes, some things remind me of NBA 2K's roster updates and how people jump into the trend to bandwagon into after a few performances. And does really Jeremy Lin deserve 400,000 votes more than James Harden?
Yeah,
and even, 500,000 more than Russell Westbrook?
Yeah, that's so silly. Yeah. Although he's not actually Chinese, we should point out.
Yeah, that's true. Taiwanese, yeah.
And American-born at that. But, I'm guessing he does get the international vote. Chris Paul does deserve it, and he got in. You know, still works. It has worked out, but yeah, that is kind of troubling that he came so close.
Yeah, Lin has been nowhere as productive as James Harden. I mean, even if you go by pure stats wise, and James Harden had to move to the Rockets team and has been doing quite great there. You know, after the trade early in the season, he's been putting up amazing numbers. He's averaging 26 points a game. And he's even shooting 85% from the free throw line. He's been having a pretty much great all around season, 5 assists per game, 2 steals per game. He's been having a great season, and Harden is one of the players I definitely want to see in the Western Reserves. I really wouldn't mind not seeing Jeremy Lin in there.
He won't be there. The coaches won't select him. I do think they'll probably give Harden the nod, though, and deservingly so.
Yeah. Yeah. And if it is one of his last years, I'd really love to see Steve Nash in there. Even though he got quite few votes. He did miss some time with the injury. His votes are at the same level as last year, but I'd really love to see him there. I really love the guy, and as his career is coming to an end, I really think he's being quite, he's all-star material. He's bound to be what the fans want to see in the All-Star, because even though he's age, he can find any guy on the court.
Oh, definitely, and it's the kind of guy you need in an All-Star game too. I think someone wrote who wants to see players like Gilbert Arenas a few years ago trying to run the fast break in an All-Star game and things like that. That didn't work out so well. So a player like Nash in the All-Star game, and it'd be good for as far as you mentioned, his career's winding down. I just don't think the Lakers should have 3 players in the All-Star game.
That's my
only knock against Nash at the moment, and not in a hatery kind of way, but they're what, 17-23 at the moment. They've been pretty ordinary at best, and that's being very kind for them to give three representatives in the game. With the, I know 2 were voted in by the fans, and that's who the fans wanted to see, and I'll defend that. Going back to Grant Hill, I'll actually even defend that, because he kind of had that bit of a renaissance year, and it was kind of a...
He did perform well, but...
It was kind of a recognition, think, recognition yeah. of sort of the comeback, and I thought that was appropriate. I mean, I don't think anyone who really deserved to be there kind of got in on the reserves that year anyway. I don't really remember the 2005 game that well off the top of my head. I think Allen Iverson might have been the MVP that year in Denver. But I mean, I'd defend that as being a decent choice. The fans wanted to see him. He made a bit of a comeback. And this year, Dwight Howard can be an exciting player. Kobe Bryant, obviously, still playing at a very high level. So that's a fair enough that they got in. But yeah, I see what you're saying about Nash, but I just don't think the Lakers should have 3 representatives. Not at 17-23.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
A fun piece of trivia about the 2005 All-Star game. Allen Iverson was the MVP. Most votes, Yao Ming, almost 2.55 million in there, seconded by only Shaquille O'Neal. The second one was Shaquille O'Neal. He didn't top Yao Ming. Shaquille O'Neal got 2.48. million votes, and that was the year of the centers, more points than any other guy in there. But about this year, do you agree that Tim Duncan should be in there as a starter over Dwight Howard?
Yes.
By performance, yes. But again, it's who the fans want to see, and I don't think at the end of the day the starters matter all that much, because there is that popularity contest aspect to,
and there's also coach strategy. Also, yeah. Coach strategy. You know, depending who gets
Duncan will be in the game, Duncan will be in the game, and he deserves to be there. So I'm not too worried about him being snubbed or anything. But yes, if you are talking about strictly performance, then I would certainly argue Duncan over Howard. But as far as the fans wanting to see Howard there, well, the fans have spoken, I guess.
For me, the point that you made, like with the coach's strategy, depends on who's coaching. You know, they might want to try and wear out Duncan a bit more. Or other players, especially when it comes to the whole conference battles for the playoffs. You know, any chance of them getting more exhausted can be the benefit for a title run in the end of the year or end of the season. So
That's certainly come up before, yeah. And yeah. The other thing that I've seen suggested before, and I don't think is a particularly bad idea, so I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on it. The idea that the fan voting selects five players for the game, but the coach is still allowed to pick the starters based on perhaps who he or the team themselves feels the most worthy. How about that?
Yeah, I'd be happy for that. You know, it could play into the coach's favour of their coaching style. You know, it's like, well, these five players best suit my coaching style. It could make it more competitive in that sense, instead of a little bit more showtime, I suppose. You know, if the coach plans it that way as such.
It would be nice to get a bit more of the competitiveness back into the game. You look at some of those games from the late 80s and early 90s, the ones I'm most familiar with. I know it would go back even further as well, but certainly some of the last great competitive games were that era, sort of the Michael Jordan, late Larry Bird, Magic Johnson era as well. It did seem to mean more to the players that there was a little bit of playground aspect to the game, as you'd expect. Again, it's the best of the best on the court, vying to be the star of stars. But there was a bit more physicality, competitiveness, and
It was a matter of defense. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, you look at the last few years when, for years, there had never been a triple double in the All-Star game, and then Michael Jordan finally got one.
Yeah.
In 1997, and in the last couple of years, both LeBron and Wade have had triple doubles in back-to-back years, and players scoring 30 and 40 points. And you didn't see it quite as often back in the day. They shared the ball around a bit more. It was pretty obvious last year that Kobe was very intent on breaking Michael Jordan's all-time scoring record for the All-Star game. He was shooting the ball pretty much every time he touched it. I guess that's Kobe. I guess that's Kobe anyway. Yeah. But
that's true.
But it's very different. You look at the recent All-Star games and some of the numbers, and it's kind of entertaining in a way, but it feels a little cheap at the same time, because it feels like it's less challenging for them to get these numbers. And that sounds like it's taking away from today's players, who are great players and could probably succeed in just about any era, just like I'd say of Michael Jordan and his ilk. But, when you're starting to see triple-doubles in back-to-back years and 30 and all-time records being challenged, all-time single-game records being challenged, like Wilt's 42 points, for example, when you see that on the bubble every year, you do start to wonder how easy it's getting and whether they're actually
trying.
Well, it's like we say, you want to see it a bit more competitive and a bit more defense, basically. Yeah.
So I said I really want to see Steve Nash in there. Any particular player that you guys, have, and also James Harden. Any particular player you guys want to see definitely in the reserves?
Well, they're talking about the chances of Damian Lillard being the first rookie guard since Michael Jordan to make the All-Star game, and I think that would be appropriate. He's had a pretty strong year for a rookie point guard the Blazers are doing better than expected, I think that would be a worthy selection in the West. And of course, I'd advocate Noah in the East, naturally, but I think that would be justified too.
For me, definitely LaMarcus Aldridge. I stressed on it last week with the whole being one of only two players scoring 20 and, or averaging 20 and 8 a game. You know, he's carrying the team like he's had to. So, I mean, Lillard and Wesley Matthews are playing well, which is good to see as well. Who else would I like to see in there? I'm not sure. I mean, Kyrie, I think he's going to be... I mean, I just want to see Mastrand Horn play in it. So, yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing Kyrie playing in it. I think, you know...
And we will claim that.
Yes, we will claim that.
Because he was born here. Until he throws a phone, he's ours.
Yeah. Oh, I done that last year. No, the year before. Won't go into that. And, yeah, it's... I'd like to see him have a crack at getting an All-Star reserve selection.
Andre Drummond, are you going to advocate for him left us?
No. Yep. Not yet as an All-Star, but I'm really looking forward to see him in the Rising Stars game and seeing if anyone is going to assume the Will Bynum role of just throwing him lob after lob for, you know, for alley-oops. He's impressive in the few things that he does right, but he doesn't do enough things right to actually be an All-Star. I see All-Stars as being more well-rounded than, you know, just doing a few things very, very, very well. You know what I mean? You can do two things almost perfectly, but if you're going to be an All-Star, you need to do five things at least at 80%. So that's why I don't see Andre Drummond being an All-Star in his first years. He needs to refine his game, but I can't wait to see him in the Rising Stars game. And is the Rising Stars format going to be the same as last year, where separating rookies from sophomores?
They haven't announced yet. I'm guessing they will. Yeah. They tend to experiment with the same format for a few years before they change it up. And, and I thought it worked out okay, because it was starting to get a bit lopsided. For some lopsided victories there. The sophomores winning for a few years by huge amounts, and then the rookies took it a bit. But
do you think they're going to go with sack and tack again, or do you think they're going to go some other way?
I'd say they will. I mean, TNT's got the game, so they're probably going to be involved in some way.
It was fun enough to see them, even to see them picking the players out. It made for good TV, if nothing else. So I guess
concept. It's like the junior All-Star game, basically. It's not necessarily separated by conference or years experience in the league. It's kind of the junior All-Star game. I remember a quote from Damon Stoudemire back in '96. Talking about the rookie challenge, which at the time was East versus West, and he made a statement about, well, I'm enjoying this because I may never be back. And indeed, Mr. Stoudemire never did make another appearance at the All-Star weekend, not even in any events, I think. So it is good just to get them to get attention, if nothing else, and it's usually entertaining as well. Yeah. So I do like the format. I think they haven't announced anything, but I do think they'll keep it.
Okay.
Yeah, so last year's one was entertaining, like when they were going through the battle of the draft part of it I think they'll keep it again. I agree. I think they'll keep it another year, and then they might decide something different for next year.
Any particular rookies besides, you know, the obvious choices of Lillard and Drummond that you want to see in the Rising Stars game?
Anthony Davis, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, okay, yeah. Anthony Davis, of course, he was the first pick. He's doing really well. I guess I just, you know, pretty much had forgotten about him because of the because of the games he missed. But he, yeah, he's an exciting prospect. And I was reading an article on ESPN about the base focused on rookies. And even though Lillard has been the most impressive this year by, you know, by a unanimous vote, everyone's expecting Anthony Davis to just fulfill his crazy potential and be the best player out of this draft class. After all, you know, after all is said and done, after a few years, they're still expecting Anthony Davis to develop the most and be the most impressive player out of the this year. Do you agree with that? Do you see that happening? Yeah, I really agree that we haven't seen everything that Anthony Davis has to give from his performances this year. But
he does seem to have some good tools. I saw him in their opener against the Spurs that the Hornets actually almost won, and he looked pretty good. He was going up against Tim Duncan. Duncan, of course, being Tim Duncan, did get the better of him and such, but seemed to be active on the boards. He's certainly athletic, so the potential's there, and he's putting up some decent numbers in the games he's appeared in so far. So he certainly could be. I mean, he seems to be a worthy number one pick. Certainly not a bust. We haven't seen his best yet, but he's certainly not a bust.
Yeah,
no, he's not Odin at the moment. So yeah,
no.
Do you think if you had to pick between Lillard and Davis, who do you see reaching the highest productivity out of the two? I mean, Lillard has already proven himself as you guys said last week, at a very difficult position to transition to coming to the NBA. I mean, playing point guard and having to, you know, orchestrate a team full of experienced players is very much harder than just having to rebound and block, which, you know, can come natural to any player. But do you see Davis surpassing Lillard and actually reaching a higher ceiling?
It's kind of tough because a center usually can take a little bit longer to develop than a point guard.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so it is that apples and orange comparison. There'll be, it purely depends on the team. You know, what they lack the most. So, and it will help determine which angle they go or how they improve. So,
anything else regarding the All-Star game we should go through this week?
Well, as far as any other players that I'd say, Russell Westbrook definitely should be there for the way the Thunder are playing. He's having a pretty good season. Mm-hmm. I think the Warriors should have a representative in the game, perhaps either Curry or Lee. Mm-hmm. Don't know whether you guys would agree with that, but I mean, they certainly surprised me. I thought they'd be basement dwellers again, and they have.
They've surprised everyone. Yeah. I don't think it's just you that the Warriors have surprised. But, 24-15.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really pretty impressive.
Yeah.
So yeah, either Curry or Lee would be appropriate, I think.
Yeah.
I think Curry could have a better chance than Lee. I think there's probably a few more power forwards or forwards that could be more deserving. But yeah, I reckon Curry's got a chance, but providing that he doesn't get injured before then too.
Mm-hmm.
If he does, then definitely opens up the door for Lee to get some representation in there.
Mm-hmm. Do you think? I mean, I had been raving about Ricky Rubio and wanting him to come back, and he's actually come back, and he's having a decent year. His numbers have definitely dropped, and he's not. I mean, he's shooting 23%. I was really expecting much more out of Ricky Rubio, and I don't know if the injury took so much out of him, because he was actually putting up, you know, 8 assists per game last year, and he's dropped to 5. He wasn't shooting well even last year. He only shot 36%, but you don't expect him to drop down to 23.
No. It could be the shoes.
He's not. He's only taking 4 shots per game. So, but still, you know, if
he's had a couple of games where he's like 2 of 9, 2 of 6. So they've kind of dropped his percentages as well. Other games have been like 2 of 3 or 1 of 2 or something like that. So he's not really shooting the ball. He's still getting a decent amount of assists, despite the fact he's really only just started playing starter minutes again. In fact, the last 2 games, the loss to the Clippers and the win over the Rockets. I'm just looking at his game log here. First time, 27 minutes, 30 minutes. Before that, it was all around about the 20-minute mark. So I think he's off to a bit of a slow start, but I think he will come good when he's actually back in his rhythm and playing starters' minutes and getting comfortable with the team again and taking a few more shots to bring his percentages up. Because, as I said, he's only a few shots a game. So so a game like 2 of 9 against the Clippers kind of stands out and really drops those percentages quite significantly. Over six against the Spurs, So a few performances like that really stand out and drop those numbers.
And the Timberwolves are playing better, you know, as a whole compared to last year. Last year they ended up on a 26-40, and they're close to 500 this year. They're 17-20 under Rick Adelman. So I really hope to see, you know, Ricky Rubio develop into the player that he's shown the potential to be. He was really impressive in Europe, and even last year, some of the passes he was making were completely, you know, they were unbelievable. His court vision is really, you know, is something you don't see out of rookies. He had court vision comparable to some of the best point guards that had ever come through the NBA. But I really hope to see him develop to be the player that his potential has shown. Anyway, should we move on?
Sure. Yeah. So before we move on, I believe before we started the show, Ben, you mentioned you had a few things you just wanted to follow up on or correct from last week.
Yep, no worries. There's about 2 things I wanted to sort of correct. One was when I was trying to mention David Cage's studio, which was actually Quantic Dream. They did Heavy Rain and also the Kara Tech demo, which won Game Trailer's best trailer for 2012, which was probably surprising a lot of people because it wasn't actually a game, it was just a tech demo. And the amount of documents that I actually had sent to EA, I after the podcast, I sort of decided to go and sort of actually check how many pages I've done. I sort of just pulled a figure out of thin air, and it's actually 824 pages that I've sent, not 600.
Wow.
So, that's an official count at the moment, and still going at the moment. I'm going to see by the time I finish my reigns as a mod where I can get up to the 1,000 mark.
EA had better make a game then. It would be sad to see all that work go to waste.
Exactly, and a lot of this too is just documents that I've actually checked and counted properly. There's some like untitled documents and notepad stuff that I didn't really check just in case. So it could be a little bit more, but I don't expect it to be much more at most. But at this stage, I'd say at this stage, the official count is 824. So a bit more prouder of my effort after that, sort of going over and reviewing and counting everything. So yeah. So those are the 2 things that I want to correct.
Okay. Good stuff. Yeah.
Any news on your mind, Ben, that you wanted to bring up?
I know
you're definitely following the next gen consoles and all the stuff that's been leaking over the past few weeks.
Yeah. Rumor with the PS4 could be scrapping the DualShock analog sticks. That's served Sony really well for the last 16 years. So
motion controls.
No.
it could be the touch system like in the PS Vita. So there's possibilities from the report that I've seen on IGN, it's there's a few options that they're testing. I think there's about four methods that they're testing to see which one works. So I know. I guess we might have to wait until May to find out if they are going to release the or showcase the Project Orbis, which is the codename for the PS4.
The way I read that article is that there's a new controller coming, but I really don't see the DualShock controller going away anytime soon. Yeah. And it's been a control scheme that, you know, so many people have gotten used to. And yeah. If you're going to introduce something, you know, I wouldn't say a gimmick, but if you're going to introduce a new control scheme, you can just scrap the old one and have all the companies that have been used to using analog controls just, you know, having to find a way to use your new controller. I mean, it was the same with Wii U. You can take advantage of the controller with a separate screen in any way you want, but yeah. You can also just ignore that and just, you know, use the new hardware to just improve the game you're making. So I don't see the DualShock going away and being completely replaced. Even if they try to push through marketing the new controller as the new best thing and the new king as far as controllers go, I still see the DualShock remaining a legacy choice that a lot of people are going to buy day one to enjoy their games. And I don't see neither an LCD screen or touch controllers or motion controls or the biometrics. I don't see anything like that actually replacing the tactile feedback that analog sticks have provided over so many years. 16, it was, you said?
Yeah, 16 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't see analog sticks becoming obsolete anytime soon.
The only thing that if they were to make some improvements to the analog sticks, you can control the tension amount, so that way
that I definitely agree. I mean, we have adjustable resistance in, for example, steering wheels in cars. They're completely electric, yet you can adjust the. How hard it is to steer, so I can see something similar happening as technology advances to controllers and, you know, having adjustable forces, adjustable resistance in the analog sticks. I'd love, for example, the analog sticks not to be so flimsy when I'm doing a driving game, but I'd love to be able to move them freely when playing NBA, for example, to, you know, be able to pull off those cool moves. It's one of the reasons I have bought some steering wheel controllers over the years, but they end up either picking up dust or being broken all too soon. So I've just given up completely on them. And whatever driving game comes, I'm still going to play with the controller. But, you know, games that require much more finesse, such as, you know, the Formula One games or the more realistic games that require a steering wheel, could really do well with, you know, some analog sticks that just have some more resistance to them and allow for finer control.
Yeah.
So if you can get adjustable resistance both in the analog sticks, and I'd say even the triggers could do with some, you know, adjustable resistance. You know, I'd love to have them harder again in driving games, but you know, acting as being as soft as buttons in other games. So that's one advance I'd really love to see in controllers.
I've got one of those Razer PC controllers, or your PC 360 controllers, and yeah, it's got ability to adjust the amount of tension. Yeah, just a little dial under the actual analog stick, and you just sort of twist that.
That's actually how much are those?
Between $50 to $70, depending what model you get in Australia. I think I got mine for about $35 when it was. Shop closed down, so but yeah, it makes a difference for playing like first person or third person shooters when you got a tiny crosshair and you're trying to get that accurate shot in or that tight target and such. So it's not just for shooting games. I mean, with sports games, definitely you want the more looser control so you can get the quick action in. But for games like racing and first person or third person games, you definitely want that tighter, more accurate responsiveness. Otherwise, you're sort of just playing around for a few moments to try and get the target exactly where you want to go. So, yeah, that's why I bought the whole tension control thing for the analog sticks. I reckon definitely makes an improvement to the playability for the game and more user friendly without people wanting to throw their controllers as such.
So seriously, Razer is making mouse pads that are $25. You can put the gaming tag on anything and just ask for a ridiculous amount of money for them. Oh no. I see more of them. I see one at $40. Oh come on, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. You have mouse pads for $40? What the hell?
Yeah,
to capitalism.
Oh, come on. And they have raving reviews. Best mousepad I've ever bought. Well, if it wasn't for $40, then you should be disappointed.
Yeah.
How good can a mousepad get?
I don't know. I didn't even use one.
I have... unfortunately, the surface of my desk is uneven as far as colors go, and it really confuses my laser mouse, so I have to use a notepad as a mouse. My cheap ass. Anyway. $40 for a mouse, but definitely not.
You think that's cheap? When I was coaching high school basketball, we had a game against a Canadian school, Surrey Creek, which is part of British Columbia. They came over and gave us some nice sleeveless shooting shirts, and we ended up giving them each student a mouse pad with the school logo on it.
Oh, at least you gave them something.
That's true.
Yeah.
I still actually have my shooting shirt that they gave me.
Oh, that's nice. No, that's a nice piece of memorabilia.
New South Wales would have been much, much classier about it. We would have given them two mouse pads.
Oh,
we are the premier state, you see, as the number plate.
We are the smart state, apparently. Although they might be changing that now. So.
Oh well. Anything else on your mind, Ben? As far as news go, anything else following?
NBA news flies, obviously Birdman getting signed to Miami.
Yeah.
I did not see that one coming.
Neither did I, to be honest. How long has it been since... did Chris Anderson become a free agent only recently?
He was amnestied, I believe, by the Nuggets.
Yeah. He played 32 games last year. Doing 44% from the floor, but that's on 3.4 shots a game, and averaging 5 rebounds on 15 minutes. So yeah, I guess the Nuggets wanted to get rid of him. Do you see the Heat making good use of him?
He's just going to be purely there for rebounds, like. I don't see him being there for points. Might get a couple of blocks if he's not stoned. and if he can actually see the ball properly. But he definitely be there for rebounding. He could be there to sort of maybe help booster or help in training sessions with Chris Bosh and Joel Anthony sort of for practice and stuff.
Don't forget about Josh Harrelson.
True.
Yeah.
I'm glad they got rid of Dexter Pittman, though. He was pretty much out of some Adam Morrison trash. So, yeah.
NBA champion Dexter Pittman, excuse me.
True. It's
like NBA champion Eddie Curry.
or Anton Walker.
Those guys have one more ring than many other guys that deserve it.
More than Malone and Stockton combined, or even separately. and with their powers combined, let's not go there.
That's mean. Oh, well. Oh, well. But, yeah, the All-Star game is coming, so we'll have... and we're looking forward into seeing who's going to enter the dunk contest and three-point contest. And I'm really looking forward to... is it weird that I'm looking more looking forward to the Rising Stars games than I am to the All-Star game?
No, not really. I mean,
I'm not expecting any surprises from the All-Star game, and but it's always exciting to see, you know, the upcoming stars getting together and playing all in the same court. I'm really looking forward to seeing, you know, Irving on one side and Lillard on the other. That's really going to be interesting.
Do you think we'll see any moments like when J.R. Richardson sort of bounced the ball off whose head was it, and then jacked up a three during the rookie soccer game?
I don't know.
The ultimate sign of disrespect is like, flashy Showtime street ball
mentality. I think we'll see a bit of street ball in that game for sure.
Yeah.
A few attempts between the legs dunks towards the end of the game, I'm sure.
Last five minutes.
I can only hope, though, that Irving and Lillard don't end up in the same team. I really want to see those two guys going up against each other. I expect them to be... no disrespect to Anthony Davis, really, but I expect Irving and Lillard to be the first guys to, be picked by the two coaches.
Yeah.
Them going first and having them in going up against each other, it's going to make for really really good game. And the only difference, you can see them going up against each other in Cleveland versus Trailblazers game, Portland games. But having them surrounded by all those great upcoming rookies is only going to make it for an even better game. And whoever it is in the same team with Drummond, they better lob the ball up to him. They had better do that.
The John Wall bounce pass style to Blake Griffin.
Yeah. It's going to be a really fun game. Absolutely. Anyway, so in other news, do we have anything else going? Did we have
I did remember something I wanted to mention that I was very, very excited about. We haven't had a lot of game discussion this week, NBA 2K13. I have been playing my career game, and I'd just like to say, gentlemen, that I've reached the absolute height of what you can do in what you can achieve in my career, I feel safe to say.
Did you do your Hall of Fame speech?
No, I've not reached the Hall of Fame. This is actually better. I have just been followed by Justin Bieber.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
You're not serious, are you?
So I might as well just click the retire option now because...
Yeah.
Who needs rings when you got Bieber following?
I got goosebumps. I can't imagine how you felt when you saw that.
It's funny because it came through at the same time as Dominic Wilkins
complimented
me on my dunks. So... I was a bit more excited about that as far as the fake Twitter is concerned. That was actually just a little bit cooler than seeing the Biebs excited to see me the next time I come to Los Angeles. But yeah, I've been having fun with that, and I'll throw up that I actually did put the picture up on our Facebook page for everyone to enjoy. So I'll put that up in the show notes when we post that. But that's my. That's my week in 2K13 gaming. I guess really they should just eliminate all the other goals for making the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And, followed by Bieber, yes or no. And it's like, okay, it's time, retire.
Yeah,
Down. It's like the God mode where it unlocks everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Hall of Fame speech should be you up on stage with Justin Bieber singing together, baby.
he inducts me.
Yeah, yeah. You being all watery-eyed just to be on stage with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that happening. I can see that. I really, Andrew, from the bottom of my heart, I really hope you get to meet the real Biebs at some point in your life.
And I mean, the rest of us.
The sense of completeness you're going to feel is would be incomparable. So,
well, if it's anything like the excitement I experienced with the game, well, you know,
yeah, I can hardly imagine.
My bucket list has but one item, you know.
Yeah.
I think I got Bieber to follow me when I scored 71. I also got David Robinson to follow me when I scored 71. So I was happy about that. What, with Robinson not Bieber? Yeah.
Do you know if the things that have been bugging the my career, any my career issues were fixed in the patch? I can't remember right now, but I'm really waiting for the patch to continue my career, because it bugs me like hell to, you know, I'm playing as a power forward and right now my skills are not very good, so I don't like having to play 35 minutes and, you know, costing my team because I'm not good enough right now to play 35 minutes.
Yeah.
Because the dynamic goal that helped my team win the game comes up in the second quarter or get the lead back when we're down by 20. So, and if you don't manage to do that, you're never going to be subbed out. So you end up being exhausted through the third and fourth quarters and, you know, being able to do nothing. So, were those bugs fixed in the patch? Are you guys aware of that?
I believe so. I believe they, looking at the patch notes, let's bring them up real quick. I'm pretty sure they were an assortment of game mode fixes were in the patch, association, online association, and my career. There it is, forum patch notes.
It says you will no longer fail the dynamic goal, give your team the lead before the game ends when subbed out before the end of the game. You're not being subbed out. That's the issue.
Yeah. Yeah. It mentions some that the play vision's fixed, so that's good. Although your unofficial fix already did that. I know we've gone through this in a previous podcast, but it looks like whenever we do get the patch for PC, we will get a few fixes for my career. But, you know, does it matter when you already have the awesomeness of being followed by Justin Bieber? I mean, the rest is just details, really.
At that point, you should be playing 49 minutes on a 38-minute
game. That's right, yeah. Should be Wilt Chamberlain the whole thing, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway. Anything else on the docket? I'm racking my brain, but it's been a very, very slow week. This might actually end up being a short podcast. God forbid.
Yeah.
we
were mentioning before the show started, if you guys have been catching any good TV lately, if you wanted to touch on that, TV or movies.
Should we? I think we also mentioned that we should bring up that the All-Star content for PS3 users is now available internationally. Did we mention that? I think we only mentioned that before.
We lightly touched on it.
So
I mentioned it in the news rundown. Yeah.
Ah, okay. So yeah, PS3 users, you can now get excited again.
Yeah,
your life is now complete.
Feel free to get ripped off. Yep.
Anyway, yeah, let's move on. Good TV. I've been since I actually, you know, got through with my studies this year, I've actually found myself having some more free time. After, you know, those 5 years. So I've been catching up on a lot of TV. I got to the seventh season of Dexter. I am now currently watching Downton Abbey, which I really like. I wasn't sure I liked all those TV shows where from, you know, I don't know how to call them. My English are failing me right now. That, you know, from old days. That's so different eras. I dabbled a bit by watching Mad Men, which is, you know, it doesn't show an era too old, but it's still fun to see the secretaries getting excited over having a photocopier in the office. So, yeah, I started with Mad Men, and now I'm watching Downton Abbey, which I really like. But the shows that most impressed me this year were actually two of the... No, three of them. I have to name three of them. It's actually... First of all, it's Sherlock, which was amazing. Benedict Cumberbatch was amazing in his role as Sherlock in that series, the modern reimagining of the... of Sherlock Holmes. There's that. There's Newsroom, which I really liked.
Yeah, I love that show.
Yeah, it's weird seeing the same guy that was on Dumb and Dumber along along Jim Carrey come such a long way. And Jeff Daniels, I really liked him in Paperman as well. I think it's still one of my favorite movies, having him alongside Ryan Reynolds and Lisa Kudrow, and I'm really getting to like the guy, especially after his performances in Newsroom. A really great cast, and it's nice to see them see episodes based on real life events of the past years, the explosion of the oil platform of BP, and the all the happenings, the criticism on Sarah Palin. I really appreciated that episode.
All the little digs at Fox News.
Especially
with like the whole Bin Laden incident. Finally caught him, and Fox News were reporting that it was Gaddafi.
Yeah, them waiting for it to become official. And there's really some guys that haven't had much exposure yet, doing some really good having some really good performances. I mean, there's Alison Peel playing as Maggie Jordan in the show, and the only previous appearance of Alison Peel for me was Scott Pilgrim versus the World, where she played the drummer girl. The ex of Scott Pilgrim. And there's Emily Mortimer that I hadn't really seen a lot of previously, John Gallagher, and Olivia Moon, and of course the absolute great Sam Waterston playing Charlie Skinner.
I really
love the guy. Amazing character. Amazing character in his role as a drunk.
my role model is a drunk.
As his role as Charlie Skinner in the show is amazing. And the other show that I really like is Suits, which actually resumed regular broadcasts last week, with the continuing the second season that ended short the previous summer and had a 6-month hiatus. And is now back for the rest of the second season. Another really good series starring Gabriel Macht and Patrick J. Adams. Some really good upcoming actors there, playing some really good. There's good writing there by it's created by Aaron Corse. It's based around a law firm. And all the goings and happenings there, and it has really witty dialogue. It has really nice acting by the whole main cast. So it's really a series to check out if you like that kind of thing. Any other TV series catching your eyes, guys? Ben,
I'm definitely a Newsroom fan. For me, I've always been a Sorkin fan, so he's obviously the writer for the show. Famous for The West Wing, Sunset Studio. He also wrote Social Network, A Few Good Men, The American President, which is what got started for the West Wing, where he had like 420 pages of script from memory, which a page equals 1 minute of script. So yeah, that's about 420 minutes of script right there for one show. For me, he's probably the best writer at the moment in Hollywood. And it's definitely refreshing seeing Jeff Daniels in his Will McAvoy role.
Absolutely. I actually come across the a national channel had Dumb and Dumber a few days ago. I just couldn't watch it. It would ruin Jeff Daniels for me. I was happy to have forgotten about that completely.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, once they see, if they see his role, it'll totally change the way that they see him. And it's good. Like I've been following him on Twitter and that, and when the season finale came up, you know, he said, you know, this is the reason why I got into acting, is this episode, which was The Greater Fool, which was a brilliant episode, and I love like a big fan of Olivia Munn's character, like Sloane Sabbath. I reckon she's just brilliant in that. The social ineptness of her, but is so likable in a way too. What's his name? The guy that plays why have I forgotten the name? It's a show I've watched probably four times.
Who are you looking for?
It's okay. I mean, I forgot the All-Star Starters for the East. So.
You forgot the Twitter handle for the website, Andrew. You have no right to blame anyone else for forgetting anything ever.
That's right.
Again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you said, it's not like you take care of it. It's not like you post through it or anything.
Yeah.
But completely agree with you on Newsroom. It's one of the best shows I have seen as far as TV series go. So I'm really looking forward to it returning for a new season. Andrew, any shows that have not just from this year, any shows that you can say from your history so far that you have that you can say you really like?
Sure. Well, I don't watch the Newsroom, but Ben sent me the YouTube link for the opening scene of the series last week, so I think I definitely will be checking that out. That was
the debate, not the debate, the interview at the college,
Southwestern.
Absolutely.
Great scene. Yeah.
That was what hooked me to Jeff Daniels breaking down and refuting the patriotic claims that both participants were sputing. With the numbers breakdown, that was a great scene. And that was a great opening scene for any series. I mean, if that's bound to get you hooked to watch at least the first episode.
From what I read, like that was one. It has been regarded as one of the best opening scenes in a TV series. It did bring back memories of another sort of series from I can't remember what year, but it drew some comparisons to that. And the fact that he actually rambled off, I remember, I think it was in 2010 when they actually, those statistics, especially with what America ranks number one in, was actually a true poll that actually came out. So Sorkin does use a lot of fact in his show. I think one of the best moments in TV that I've seen in a long time. So I'm definitely glad to see him back writing shows, and with HBO giving him a lot of freedom in being able to write, because he is a freaking genius when it comes to writing.
Agreed. So, Andrew, do you want to double a bit on TV series and give us your favorites?
Well, at the moment, I have a couple of sitcoms that I do keep up with, The Big Bang Theory and How I Met Your Mother. I'm sure some people are rolling their eyes because sitcoms not always looked on very favorably, but, fuck you.
I agree with you on The Big Bang Theory. I still think they're putting out some great episodes, especially the one where the girls go together and actually fought over comics.
That was
a very good one.
Spoiler alert, I haven't seen that one yet.
It's been out for some time, so it's only your fault. I don't care.
I've been waiting for it to come back just before the Christmas break and that. I know vaguely what happens, but I haven't tried ruining it for myself yet. But I see a lot of similarities and quotes in that in Big Bang Theory that Sorkin does use as well.
Sorkin uses his own quotes in every series he ever makes.
That's true. The Sorkinism, so yes, but yeah, there is some similar references. I wonder if their writers have drawn inspiration from his writing and that.
It's an apples and oranges comparison. I mean,
Sorkin
has made compared to Big Bang Theory. But, the point that I wanted to make was How Met Your Mother. How are you still watching that?
Am I still watching it? I still find it entertaining. The overall arc, how he met the mother, has been dragging on for eight seasons.
Nobody cares! Nobody still cares about how he met the mother. Nobody's expecting that to happen anytime soon.
We've seen that yellow umbrella.
We've seen that yellow umbrella all too many times to actually care about it anymore.
No, we actually are getting closer because the current season is...
the last one?
No, they're actually... It hasn't been officially...
Yeah, they renewed it. For a ninth season.
But the season 8 is to conclude with Robin and Barney's wedding at which he does meet the mother. So we're getting closer to that. I'm guessing season 9 is going to be kind of a postscript season of dating the mother or something like that.
Yeah.
Kind of like, I'm guessing that's what they're going to do.
Breaking up with her 5 times in the length of the season,
that's Mosby for you. But there's still some good jokes, some funny scenes that I enjoy. They certainly have milked that as much as they can. Actually, read an interesting remark from Craig Thomas and Carter Bays, the executive producers and creators of the show, that said if they knew how long the series was going to run and sort of how successful it was going to be, they wouldn't have called it How I Met Your Mother. They would have tweaked it. It would have slightly. And they also had a plan if they didn't make it through the first 13 episodes that Victoria was going to be revealed as the mother sort of halfway through that season, just so it would kind of end. But it's still watchable. I mean, it's.
Is there a particular reason they actually went into length to make Victoria look so much worse? After the episode where she is in a wedding dress, I mean, in the next episode where they're all sitting together, it's like they actually try to make her look much worse.
I thought
she was absolutely beautiful in the wedding dress, but when they're sitting all together in the couch in the episode where they show them fighting all the time, she looks nothing like it. Yeah.
I think that was meant to exaggerate the whole situation of how it wasn't the fairy tale that it appeared to be on the cliffhanger of season 7. Not that we knew that she was going to be the mother anyway, because that's already been dispelled. But they wrapped that whole arc up very quickly. But yeah, I'm still enjoying that. Big Bang Theory, I feel, is probably a much stronger show at the moment.
Absolutely.
They've really rejuvenated it by adding Bernadette and Amy actually a couple more ladies in the cast to give Penny a bit more than just being that girl that hangs out with the nerds, basically.
Amy must be one of the funniest comical roles I've seen in television in a long time.
She plays it well. Plays it really
well. Yeah, she definitely does. Especially, I don't know, how many episodes have you lost, Ben, because I don't want to spoil this for you.
The lot. The last one that was one of the new ones. It was the one before.
Okay, I'll try to get to.
I know that Penny says she loves Leonard. That was the episode the week before. That was
nobody
the last
cares
one.
About that anyway. So did
hey,
you see?
Excuse me,
the,
hope, damn it!
Did you see the episode that Amy was sick?
That's hilarious.
There's one particular scene that split through the episode that had me in tears.
Not the spanking?
Yeah, that was the one. That was the one. That was one of the funniest pieces of TV I've ever seen.
You're not supposed to enjoy this.
Oh, God. I really can't imagine how many takes that must have required to get to go through. How can you ever do that? How can you ever do that without breaking down laughing and actually getting through it and, you know, actually recording it? I can hardly imagine. It was so funny. One of the funniest pieces of TV I've seen in the past few years. So other than Big Bang Theory and How I Met Your Mother, any other sitcoms? I've been hearing quite a few good words about Modern Family, which I gave up on last year. I thought some episodes felt like didn't feel fun enough to me, so I found myself giving up completely on the show. And but friends that stuck with it are telling me that it actually picked up and is actually quite good again. Have you watched any of Modern Family at all?
I've seen some of the early episodes, actually.
Yeah.
And I'm a fan of Ed O'Neill.
Who isn't?
Married with Children.
Yeah.
And he does an awesome Eric Baker in The West Wing as well.
Yeah, he's quite good and funny and everything. I've seen some of the early episodes, and I've liked them well enough. I've never really gotten into the show, though. Mm. It's one of those ones that sometimes it's on, and I'll watch it and think, you know, that was entertaining, but it's not been one that I've...
It's not the one that will get you hooked, definitely. But apparently, if you stick through it, it has some really good episodes. Any other shows you want to mention? Because I want to mention some of the older ones that I really loved over the years.
Well, you wondered why I was still watching How I Met Your Mother. I am actually still watching The Simpsons, which is probably the more embarrassing thing for me these days.
I'm still watching it. Not as much at the moment.
Watch it out of loyalty. I watch it out of loyalty. And actually, the latest season has actually not been too bad. It's nowhere near classic, don't get me wrong. And I've spoken about this in our thread in our entertainment and media talk section in the forum, because I usually post my thoughts on each episode every week. The last few have actually been pretty good by current standards. They haven't been too bad at all. Family Guy, which I also still watch,
I've come
very close to not watching it. Some of the recent episodes have just been so bad, so unfunny, so mean-spirited, so cookie-cutter, so terrible that it got to a point where I thought, and I hate making that statement, because it's one of those typical internet things, I'm never watching again, and next week you're posting a review of the show. Old declarations. I'm never coming to the forum again. I'm never buying another EA
NBA 2K game.
Exactly, yeah. And of course, there you are next year, next week, whatever. But it was one of those times when I thought, am I really enjoying the show? Or is this time... I'm kind of a completionist. To the bitter end kind of guy. I guess maybe that's why I'm still interested in NBA Live after all these years. Certainly why I'm still watching The Simpsons. And Family Guy, when it's good, it's a very funny show. They've got a very funny brand of humor.
Yeah.
But some of the last few episodes, was there one? Or the week before last, actually. Not too bad. Certainly an improvement. But about three or four in a row before that, it was... I watched them.
You could say McFarlane is doing Ricky Rubio right now.
Yeah.
You know, he has potential. You want him to get to it, but he's definitely slumping.
I don't know if you've seen. Don't know if you've seen any of the Comedy Central roasts with Gilbert Freed and such. There's one where he's hosting, and he of course makes his jabs at Gilbert Gottfried, and he comes down and says, "Seth MacFarlane, everybody, you know. Be kinder to him. The Simpsons have never done a roast before, so there's no way he's going to know how to do it and all this."
wasn't it the Pamela Anderson one?
I think that
Seth MacFarlane was hosting? Either he's that done, or the...
He's done a few. He's But actually, I'd also recommend anyone, if you're not easily offended, that is, look up Gilbert Gottfried's roast of Joan Rivers. It is... gathering party with my friends on Saturday night, and we were watching that on YouTube, just out there hanging out, having a few drinks and watching some YouTube videos and watching Gilbert Gottfried roast Joan Rivers, and just cracking up, because he goes pretty far and it is hilarious.
I'm seeing him. I see Ted 2 was already announced. Without just announced, not there isn't a year or anything. But did you guys see Ted? Did you?
Yeah, I bought her on Blu-ray. I did enjoy Ted. I mean, aside from hearing Peter Griffin's voice all the time, and it had its funny parts to it. Yeah, it was. I was expecting it to go a little bit more wilder there. But the whole Flash Gordon part in it was. Yeah, that was pretty entertaining. I'd give Ted 2 a chance to sort of see where he takes it, you know.
Yeah, but it should be a long time before we see Ted 2, considering Ted only came out in 2012. So, but yes, I was looking up Seth MacFarlane's history, and he's been in a few roles. He's been in the David Hasselhoff one, which was a funny one as well. Yeah. I really enjoyed that one. Yeah. The Charlie Sheen one, I felt that everything that I had already heard everything that could be said about Charlie Sheen. There wasn't anything new in the roast, so it felt like I had heard all the jokes about the guy already. I liked Charlie Sheen in Two and a Half Men. I really believe he was only playing himself.
He was
really good at it. And besides all the shit that he made others go through, Two and a Half Men was a good show with him. I have to give him that. I enjoyed the show. And
in the jokes, like the lines that they sort of pushed with it, I was intrigued by that. Like, yeah, to see how close they can get to the boundary before going too far. And that, it was like, how'd they get away with that one? With the FCC and all that. Sort of similar with Two Broke Girls. Like, that's got a similar style and humor. I don't mind that one. Like, it's entertaining, to say the least. And it's probably the women's sort of version of Two and a Half Men.
Two Broke Girls is actually one of the sitcoms that I really seem to enjoy its episode, but I really have no idea why I'm enjoying it so much. I mean, besides the lines of Oleg, which are, you know, absolutely hilarious. He's the dirty guy that should be in every sitcom, saying the things we all think. I mean, the joke when one of the patrons of the diner was choking, and Caroline screams out, "What do you do when a woman's choking?" Oleg responds, "I just pull back a bit." pull out a bit. It was one of the dirtiest jokes, yet so hilarious. So yeah. Oleg's lines in Two Broke Girls are really great, and you know it's funny how Whitney Cummings managed to do so well with Two Broke Girls when Whitney was mediocre, to say the least. And I really enjoy Kat Dennings in the role of Max Black. I really enjoy the lines that she has, especially when she goes up against hipsters in the diner.
Yeah.
every line coming out of your mouth is a refreshing piece of poison for you know a group of people I really hate. As if emos weren't enough. Anyway, I guess each age and era has those people that feel such a great need to make themselves differ from the rest of society. But one of my favorite TV series ever has to be House. I mean, Hugh Laurie, the seven seasons of House were really great, and even if not all episodes were great, I mean, it's one of the seasons that you really see how they would do better if they had 12 episodes per season, because they have to drag out some pieces of the main story, and some things are overdone when you have to put out 24 episodes a season, especially when it's a dramatic one. Comedy series where they only have to do 20 minutes an episode can really do 24 season episodes better. But House was one of my favorite series ever. Because of the writing, the acting, the direction, And Hugh Laurie will always be the guy I will have to remember from House. And he, like Jeff Daniels, he has a past that he'd rather not remember. I mean, he was the father in Stuart Little, so that was that was his most popular piece of acting. That and the 1 minute segment in Friends. So
he also had Blackadder. That was with Rowan Atkinson. That was fantastic.
Ah, okay.
You're not familiar with Blackadder, the British series?
No, not really. But you say Rowan Atkinson, so I will trust that one.
Yeah.
Dexter, I really enjoyed, and what was special about Dexter, and I find it really hard to find in other series, is how hooked I was at and how it had me at the edge of my seat for every episode for six straight seasons. It managed to have the anxiety at the peak at each episode's end, and there was no way to find myself being able to stop just watching the next episode, unless it was 4 a.m. in the morning and I was too exhausted to actually watch another one. I actually went through the first six seasons in quite a fast pace. And I really enjoyed it. I'm forgetting the name of the Michael C. Hall. Yeah, he's a guy I didn't even know existed before Dexter, and he's doing so well in the role of Dexter. And it's a really great series. Really great series if you haven't watched it, as far as the dramatic one, and it stars Michael C. Hall as the, not a psychopath, it's just a troubled, he had a troubled childhood because he saw his mother being murdered in front of him, so he has a need to murder that he can't control, but luckily his father pushed him in the way of only murdering murderers, so yeah, it's a constant struggle of trying to punish people for trying to murder murderers and still trying to keep a real life going and keeping out of suspicion. And he is working in a police department, so that becomes even harder as seasons progress. Really nice series to pick up on if you like dramatic and police series. Any other favorites you guys want to mention?
Since we mentioned British series, not sure if you guys are familiar with Red Dwarf at all. It had a comeback series last year. It had a bit of a three part special 2 years ago, I think, or two or three years ago. Now, about 10 years after the series ended on a cliffhanger, the original run. So it was kind of nice to get a bit of a follow up series to that. It wasn't quite up to par with the classics, as you'd expect. The cast is again another 10 years older, so they starting to get on and have to shift the concept a little bit to keep it fresh. But it certainly benefits from having the same original writer and the British brevity, the 6 to 8 episodes a season or a series. So I quite enjoyed seeing it again and just continuing the story that did end on a bit of a disappointing cliffhanger. Well, disappointing that it was a cliffhanger, basically. I know some people like that whole idea, but it was kind of not quite as bad as The Sopranos Cut to Black, but yeah. But it was
that's a lot of people off.
Yeah, but no, I was quite pleased to see that come back and get another series, and I think they might be coming back with some future ones, so that'll be something for me to look forward to, and anyone else who likes a British comedy as well.
Yeah, you know what bothers me with British TV series, the three 1 hour episode format for a whole series, and then you have to wait for a year before the series picks up again. Sherlock had that, Luther, which was another great British series, one of the most recent ones, I think, has a total of 9 episodes over 2 seasons. So I really don't get why they do that.
It's a smaller writing staff. When you look at the staff of a like The Big Bang Theory, you've got a whole sort of writer's room, whereas with the British series, there's only maybe sometimes even one or two people writing the series, which in a way is good because you can get really focused and the idea doesn't get watered down. I mentioned The Simpsons before. It's obviously had a lot of writers over the years, so there's been a lot of shift with the tone of the comedy and such, whereas with the British series, where you've got that one or two writer team, sometimes two writer team, or just even the one person writing it, there's that focus, and it's always their vision, so there's kind of that. But yeah, I do know what you mean. You sort of get into the series, and then all of a sudden, and that was the final episode. Wait till the next season. So yeah, it can be a bit of a tease in that regard.
Yeah, I got the same feeling. Yeah, with The Newsroom, the first season was only 10 episodes, and they started filming on November 12th, and it won't show until June 23rd this year. So it's like a long wait, and you're like eager to know what happens. So it's like,
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Sherlock managed to get such a big cliffhanger in just 3 episodes, and I can't imagine. I was lucky enough to have the second season waiting for me. I can't imagine how it would be to be watching, to be keeping up with that, and after 3 episodes, finding out that the series is just over and you have to wait a year before you can watch again. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it has, if you had to pick your most favorite TV series ever up to now, which one would it be?
Simpsons. I'd have to say Simpsons because it's influenced my style of humor, my politics, pretty much everything, I guess, and just had so many classic lines, jokes, and stories over the years. I know a lot of people look down on animation, but it's certainly never been a kid's show. So, I'm going with The Simpsons, with MASH probably also being up there as well. Big fan of that. Which is funny, because it ended the year before I was born, so...
Yeah.
For me, The West Wing is still probably my great, favorite show of all time. Watching that brings up a lot of memories. And it did bring my influence into politics and stuff as well. I was already a little bit of a fan of local politics and that, but it drew me into more to international politics. And just the fact that some of the episodes actually had an effect on real life situations, like the episode Good Day, which was in season 6, it was about stem cell research and how Democrats would try and outsmart the Republicans to get the vote for stem cell research to approve. And what actually happened was some British MPs actually watched that episode and they actually mimicked it and they actually did that, and it helped, or it was what brought down Tony Blair's prime ministership as well. It was one of the key things that brought his prime ministership down. So it did have some huge influence in real life situations.
Yeah. My pick would have to be House up to now, but I really feel that if Newsroom continues on to be a successful multiple season series and be as great as the first season was, I really feel it's going to surpass that. I had so much fun and was so hooked in all the episodes of the first season that I really hope it just keeps up the good pace out of dramatic series. Funnily enough, out of comedies, if I had to pick one, I think I could even go with The Office, at least during the Steve Carell era. Before this season, I really feel The Office provided Carell with one of his best roles up to now, and he's recently taken a turn for the more serious. He's doing. He did some movies like Seeking a Friend for the End of the World, where he's playing along with Keira Knightley, and what was the name of the other one with. Anyway, I'm forgetting right now some serious roles as of late, but The Office has to be one of my favorite comedy series, and I really like The Office so much. It's the same reason I like Parks and Recreation as well. It's the same style of single camera around the office, making a documentary that I really liked. And if you get the right people to play the right roles, like Steve Carell was the boss in The Office, or in Parks and Recreation, how it's Amy Poehler and Nick Offerman starring and doing a great job at it. And along with that, I could say The Office was my favorite series, but if I had to go for the best, for the smartest maybe comedic series that I've ever seen and the most witty one, it could be 30 Rock. I don't know, Andrew, you've been a fan of sitcoms. I don't know if you've watched 30 Rock. But I really feel that any scene you can, 30 Rock is one series that you can either pick up and watch in full, or you can just watch clips in YouTube and see the comedic genius of Tina Fey shine, her satire on current events. And you know, and the American culture is really, really amazing. One of the, as I said, one of the wittiest comedic series I've watched. But yeah, as far as favorites go, right now, House, and a really close second is Newsroom, and it's to be decided based on its longevity. I have to give House because it did seven. So, yeah, it lasted for seven successful seasons and seven 24-episode seasons at that. So I can't give it to the Newsroom quite yet, but still.
I'm the same with that. I want to see it last as long as The West Wing and that did. You know, that lasted seven seasons as well.
Not only see it last in itself. You know, it's not just the length, but you want to see it last and also be good at it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Remain interesting. Remain witty. Remain good in its criticisms and everything. Because we have seen shows being overdrawn just for the sake of they were successful. So let's just keep it up, even though everyone felt like they could come to an end. I don't want to say Two and a Half Men and Ashton Kutcher, but I have to. That's as much as I have to say about TV series.
Yeah.
And anything else you guys want to add, or should we wrap up after just 1 hour and 45 minutes of recording and do everyone a favor?
Yeah, I think we'll try a shorter episode this week, see how it goes. We probably went a bit longer than I thought we would, but that's okay.
You know, I have to be honest, we have been, it felt like we were trying quite hard to keep it going. It's been a very, very slow week.
Yeah,
it has.
But I can only hope that maybe someone else's fake girlfriend will die, so we'll have more. We'll have more for next week.
Okay, shall we wrap it up then?
I have nothing to add really. I have been racking my brain for something interesting, but it's better to cut it short than go on for too long.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Andrew, the honors are yours to wrap it up.
Okay.
Be a bit more enthusiastic, Andrew. You're the administrator. It's the podcast. You can't be that bored.
No. So that's going to do it, everyone. I hope you and your fake girlfriends enjoyed this week's episode. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at the NLSC. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/the NLSC. Check us out on YouTube, youtube.com/NBA Live Series Center. And, of course, all the latest news, file editions, and all that stuff, NBA-live.com. Thanks again for listening. I'm Andrew.
I'm Leftos.
And I'm Ben. I'm the fake girlfriend.
We'll see you and your fake girlfriends next week. See you guys.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 14th episode of the NLSC podcast. This is the weekly show about basketball video games that you and your fake girlfriend can enjoy together. I'm Andrew, and I've enjoyed... I've written my script where I've written enjoy instead of joined. Okay,
we'll do it. Just keep going. It was funny enough.
I'll do it again. Take two.
Okay. I'm not cutting it out. You can do it again, but I'm not cutting it out.
Oh,
oh well.